Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining USA Mutual's Vice Fund call. Today, Jordan Waldrop will do a quick overview of the opportunity in the vice sectors, followed up by a breakdown of our investment into legal Canadian cannabis, a bit about the environment of the marijuana industry, and our plan to increase exposure within the vice fund. This call will be followed up by a Q&A session, but before we get into it, I'm going to read a quick disclosure. This presentation may contain forward-looking statements based on current assumptions and forecasts made by USA Mutuals or the Vice Fund. Various known and unknown risks, uncertainties, and other factors may lead into material differences between the actual and future results, financial situations, development, or performance of the Vice Fund. All right, Mr. Waldrop, the call is yours.
Thank you, Nick, and I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today for this call. We're going to be talking a lot about long-term trends today. It's something that we lean on in our investment process here in the Vice Fund, and so it's important to us. So as Nick said, we're going to cover a few things today. First, we'll talk a little bit about the Vice Fund and the trends that we're invested in there and how marijuana fits within that. Then we'll turn to Canada. You know, why is it in the lead, what it represents on the global stage. We'll finish up with, you know, what we like about the cannabis companies we've invested in, some of the risks that they're facing, and how we hope to invest in the space as this market develops. And then we'll finish up with some Q&A. So let's get started. As far as the Vice Fund and how marijuana fits, the Vice Fund's been around for 16 years. It invests in alcohol, defense, tobacco, and gaming. And each of these sectors have significant tailwinds. These are opportunities and trends that are investable, knowable, and long-term. So we base our investments on bedrock trends rather than, you know, quarter-to-quarter noise. We feel very strongly that these trends have the ability to deliver over time for our investors, and we're very careful about doing anything that would disturb or interfere with that. And we feel that marijuana fits the bill. So let's just walk through these real fast so you understand kind of what context we're putting this within. Within alcohol, alcohol is very levered to the emerging markets. You know, one trend there that we're invested in is the move towards urban environments. You know, the developing world in 2000 was about 40% urban. Today it's about 50% urban, and it's projected to be 60% urban by 2030. For context, the developed world is about 80% urban, and all those people moving to cities have greater incomes and more access to products. This is very good for alcohol companies, more consumers, new consumers. Another trend is middle-class spending. China right now is in the process of passing the United States to become the largest middle-class consumer on Earth as far as total spending. India is expected to pass the U.S. around 2030. Again, this is really good for more spending, aspirational spirits, those type of things. And this is another trend for new and more consumers for these alcohol companies. A domestic trend that we're invested in there is millennial tastes. Millennials prefer craft spirits, and they prefer cocktails. They prefer wines. So they're the largest consumer group, and there are significant companies that are focused in that area, and that's where we focused our domestic investments. If you look at defense, U.S. budgets are expanding. President Trump asked for a 10% increase in defense spending in 2017. He got 18% increase. This is spending that's going towards modernizing our military with big long-term projects. Everyone knows about the F-35, but there's discussions about the B-21 bomber, the Virginia-class submarine. These are long-term projects. And within that, you have cyber warfare. I mean, cyber is the new Cold War, as we can all tell from the news and the noise. And cyber spending has increased 38% over the last few years. That doesn't look like it's going to stop anytime soon. And if you look internationally, you know, there was a big stink recently about the NATO summit. Well, this is nothing new. NATO committed to expanded spending back in 2014. At the time, only three countries were spending 2% of GDP on defense, and they committed to expand that. Earlier this year, NATO released a report that said that eight countries are expected to spend 2% of GDP on defense this year, and the goal is 15 by 2024. So that's spending that should be a stable bedrock for all of our defense names. If you look at tobacco is a little different. It's more of a cash cow. You know, a lot of companies paying 4-plus dividends, but there are new products that are changing the way consumption's happening there. And one thing that's kind of surprising to people, the highest rate of smoking among various cohorts is among millennials. So tobacco is not really going anywhere, and it has a tremendous opportunity in front of it as marijuana becomes more and more legal. And we'll get to that a little bit more in a minute. And finally, gaming. Gaming has been driven by Macau since 2002. In 2002, Macau's gaming revenue was $2.2 billion. Today, it's $33 billion annually, and it's still growing. It's levered to Chinese economic growth and Chinese wealth. And it doesn't show any reason to slow down, honestly. But you add on to that, we just legalized sports betting in the United States. That's somewhere between a $38 and a $50 billion opportunity in total. That's if every state were to legalize it. Well, that's not where it's at right now, but it gives you an idea of the kind of opportunity where 14 states are already moving towards legalization. And one of the biggest trends there that no one's talking about is Japan. Japan has passed a law that would set up the structure for casino gambling in Japan, and they're just in the process of trying to figure out how they're going to regulate it. Once that second law that would regulate it comes to fruition, which Prime Minister Abe is for and his political party is for, so there's backing, they would like to have it by the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. I mean, that could be anywhere between a $11 billion type, you know, Las Vegas opportunity or something as big as Macau. So there's trends in gaming and trends in all these spaces that we're very excited about that we feel can drive our investments going forward. And we're adding marijuana to this mix because we feel it has a knowable trend that we can invest in. And it also fits with the space. First of all, you know, marijuana consumers tend to have a predictable pattern so far from what we can see. If you look at how marijuana is consumed, it has a little bit of a blend between the kind of binging structure of alcohol and the kind of day-to-day structure of tobacco. But either way, it does appear that it is something that is more stable in good economic times than bad. People tend to spend on it, period. So it's not really a fad, and sales levels should be relatively predictable for us in the long run as we learn more about these consumers like alcohol and tobacco. But the space is already in the process of integrating with alcohol and tobacco. Constellation took the lead in this when they put a 10% investment into Canopy Growth, which is the biggest marijuana producer in Canada. And they expanded their holding recently when Canopy did a convertible debt offering. They took 30% of it. So they're obviously positioning themselves there to make non-alcoholic THC, CBD-based drinks. And that's not for the Canadian market per se. That's for the global market that's developing. Molson Coors has said they're open to making THC and CBD beverages as well, so there's probably more to come there. And that's to say nothing about tobacco. You know, they've stayed clear of this market and saying much other than to kind of license some technology on the vaping side. But Altria's CEO said they wouldn't do anything while it is illegal, which implies that they will when it is. And, you know, given the regulatory and excise tax and distribution limitations and marketing limitations that tobacco has operated under for the last 50 years, we view them as being kind of ideally suited to become the Bud Light of marijuana eventually. So that should offer a growth opportunity for them. So marijuana has some similar growth consumer patterns, and it's already in the process of integrating with existing vices. And this leads us to the trend that we're investing in. Similar to other vice stocks, you know, cannabis has leverage to a trend. And, you know, it's not emerging markets or new consumers or budgets. The other ones here, it's levered to growing legality. As markets open up with medical and recreational market legality, more consumers will be coming to the play. That's something we can see and invest in. And so let's turn to the Canadian market. That's where all the noise is recently. That's what everyone's talking about. And the first question everyone asks is, you know, why Canada? Why does Canada have these companies and the U.S. doesn't? I mean, California has had legal medical marijuana since 1996. But the companies that were operating since then did not have access to capital markets or financial institutions or something as simple as security to transport cash. All that was basically unavailable to them. So it really stunted growth. Canada passed medical marijuana on a national level in 2001. And they've had 17 years of developing their businesses on the medical side with access to capital markets in Canada, although, you know, it was limited in some ways, but they had access. And that actually kind of reminds me of something. I was at a cannabis conference in LA back in April, and they had multiple panels up there. And one of the panels was high-end U.S. Cannabis growers. And they were talking about how they had just expanded to produce 1,000 kilograms, how they had access to this store or this distribution network, and they were all very proud of what they were doing, and rightfully so. But then the Canadians got up there, and they were talking about how they were expanding to produce an extra 100,000 kilograms, and how they had a distribution deal with a pharmaceutical distributor in Germany, and that access to Australia. I mean, it was a completely different level of sport. And this is where 17 years of prep and development are paying off for Canadian companies now. They've just got a big head start. And so when we look at Canada, this is the first time a G7 country has legalized recreational marijuana, but it's a trend everywhere. If we start just looking in the United States, in April of 2017, there was a Gallup poll that came out, and it was kind of a big deal because it said that 64% of Americans polled were for recreational marijuana. They wanted it to be legalized. What was interesting, though, was that 72% of Democrats and 67% of independents were for it, but a majority, 51% of Republicans, were for it as well. And politicians take notice of this. Already today, marijuana is legal in 9 states plus Washington, D.C. And just recently, Vermont became the first state to pass it via legislature and the governor signing it into law. So you don't even need to go through like a public referendum anymore. It's been decriminalized in 13 states, and medical is available in 31 states, with Oklahoma just joining the list. It's got oils available, the CBD type oils available in 15 other states. There's only 4 states in the United States that don't have any kind of legalization available: Nebraska, Kansas, South Dakota, and Idaho. And Nebraska is one of the ones that's decriminalized, so it's hardly in that category. And this isn't just in the United States, although that's where we talk about it all the time. It's an international trend as well. Medical marijuana is legal in some form or another, whether it's from purely medical smoking or all the way to just using marijuana-derived based drugs in 38 countries. And those are concentrated around Europe, the Americas, Australia, and New Zealand. It's really more taboo in Asia. As far as recreational marijuana goes, though, it's only legal in 2 countries today, Spain and Uruguay. Canada will be the third, and as we said, the first G7 country this fall. But you've got 43 other countries who have decriminalized it or don't enforce the laws or enforce the laws so poorly or on such a limited basis as it might as well be decriminalized. All of this is a huge sea change that's happened over the last 20 to 30 years. In our opinion, this is a knowable trend. It's something that we can identify as a concrete shift in voter attitudes and opinions. And medical marijuana is acceptable due to, you know, patients' health, but it typically leads to a changing opinion about recreational marijuana. And it leads towards more opinions and more support for laws that would legalize it. We don't as we said, we don't like to speculate any more than we have to, and we prefer bedrock trends over quarter-to-quarter noise. You know, trends in urbanization, trends in middle-class spending, new markets opening up, increased, you know, budget spending. These are trends we can identify to potentially realize superior equity returns over time. And marijuana's trend is new legal consumers. And please note what I said there. I said new legal consumers because these consumers exist already. They're just on the black market. And what we're looking at here is a shift of sales from black market to the legal market. So what is this opportunity that we see in Canada? What kind of potential does it have? Well, if you look at Canada, it's 36 million or so people, $1.5 trillion in GDP. For comparison, the United States is 320 million people, so about 9-10 times bigger, 18 trillion, 19 trillion GDP, you know, somewhere 10-12 per times larger. I mean, California on its own is larger both in population and significantly larger in GDP. So Canada is, well, in the great scope, kind of a small market, but it's still big business. And it's a seed from which an international market can grow. So if we're talking about what's going to, the water that's going to be for this new market, you're talking about how big is the black market now. And unfortunately, the black market doesn't pay taxes or register sales, just like Al Capone. So we can only estimate here. But most estimates put the Canadian black market in the kind of the $6 billion range. You add on another maybe $400 to $500 million in medical. So somewhere in the $6.5 to $7 billion range is where it's at. And most of the projections we're seeing right now are putting the legitimate marijuana market at around $7 billion by 2021. And you might ask yourself, you know, that doesn't represent much growth at all. I mean, what's going on? And what's happening in this process is the black market is not going to shift to the legitimate market overnight. It's going to be a process. And, you know, Canada has taken a stance where edibles, vaping, and beverages, those are going to remain illegal for the foreseeable future, probably about a year, maybe longer, maybe less. But, you know, there are quote-unquote unique risks there associated with dosing, strength, quality control, all the processes that they have to get in place. But that means the black market is still going to be there and functioning, and it should slow some of this shift over to the legal market. And one thing I want to bring up here, just to draw your attention to it, there's been some discussion about the issue of substitution risk for alcohol producers. And I feel that risk is very overblown. As we said, this is not about, you know, a $7 billion market being created. It's about the market shifting into the taxable legitimate market. So dollars that were spent in the black market will be spent in the legitimate market. It's not that a dollar that was spent on alcohol before is now going to go to marijuana necessarily. So you add on the fact that there's an opportunity for alcohol producers to make new products and add new and get into this space. I really feel that concern is overblown. So let's take a look at the characteristics of the companies that we've invested in. I mean, I'm sure you can all guess that Canopy is one of them. If you want to see the kind of characteristics we're looking for, that's pretty much going to encapsulate it. The primary thing that we want to see right now is international reach. As we said, Canada is a seed from which the international market can grow. As these international markets open up, these companies have to have relationships and abilities to grow there. Otherwise, they're going to get run down by larger players in the future. And so the companies that we're invested in have deals or a presence in places like Denmark, Germany, Spain, Australia, Israel. There's even one that has, or several that have agreements in the United States already. And they're positioning themselves to put more agreements in place. The second thing that we want to see is low-cost production. That will get to one of our risks, but in Canada, that means greenhouses with as much automation as possible because of the risks of pricing, which we'll get to in a second. And the third thing we want to see is, as much as possible, we want to see established brands. the companies that we've invested in typically have brands that are already known in the space. And that's important because if you look at tobacco, the production of tobacco has not been an increase in profitability for the farmer for a long time. All the value is going to the brand. And we feel like that's where the marijuana space will go to eventually as well. I mean, honestly, if you look in Canada, any pothead who wants to start a farm can get some funding, it seems like, or has been able to for the last 5 years. We're not interested in someone like that. We want someone who has the full scope of brand, cost, and most importantly, international reach. And so if you're going to be able to compete in the global market, we got to understand what some of these risks they're facing are. And the number one biggest risk that we're looking at right now is overexpansion. Canada, as we said, population 36 million people or so. If you look at the current production capabilities in Canada, you're looking at about an ounce per person, man, women, and child in Canada, and they're rapidly expanding that. I mean, you can't build a greenhouse and put all the stuff in place overnight. So they are planting right now for legalization in October. And you also can't necessarily take away from medical because medical production is different, has tighter tolerances. They have needs for more, you know, cleaner production, more consistent levels of drug, et cetera. So there's a big risk of overexpansion in Canada. And it folds into our second risk, which is there's a risk of slower legalization than we expect. Now, this is not a trend that we expect to get derailed, but, you know, medical and recreational, no matter how many people support it, you know, the bureaucracy and government can take longer to act than we would expect. And that can exacerbate the overexpansion potential that we mentioned before. And what this means is that any new entrants need to have, you know, significant financial backing to be able to compete with falling prices and the tax structure that's going to be in place. And falling prices will happen. Legality leads to falling prices, both in the legitimate and in the black market. If you look at California, pre-legalization, recreational marijuana was going for $2,200 to $2,500 a pound. Today, that's running at around $1,300 a pound. And it can sell for as low as $500 a pound on the black market. So we're going to see a race to the bottom in pricing, and you must have economies of scale to compete in this market as we move forward. I mean, 5 years ago, you had higher prices. You could open a greenhouse or a smaller thing, and you didn't have to squeeze every dollar out of it in order to be successful. We're not at that point yet, but that's where it's heading towards. The last risk I want to mention is taxes. You know, the governments are okay with this because they're going to be increasing tax receipts. This is something that they can help fill out their budgets. But, you know, in medical marijuana right now, consumers there are already fighting this in Canada because for them, this is a drug to help them with their health. Whereas the legal marijuana is a product for people to consume. Patients are getting caught in the middle of legalization. It just goes to show that there's potential for people to stick to the black market here. If you set your taxes too high, black market sales will just continue to dominate. And so you have to deal with the realities of enforcement in a legal market, which makes it even more difficult. There's lots of problems there, and governments have to be aware of taxing themselves out of any taxes, if you will. So as of today, we've put our toe into this space a little bit. It just kind of worked out that way that we made this move shortly about the time that Canada legalized it. We had to jump through a lot of hoops with compliance and legal and then making sure everyone was comfortable. But we have established our positions in a very small way. But our goal is to grow these over the remainder of the year. And we'd like to have somewhere between 8 and 10% of the portfolio in the space. But I want to emphasize that for us, this is not about investing in Canada or Canadian marijuana. We are focusing on companies that can play in the international market. And so we'll keep a very close eye on legalization in other countries, because if there's other companies out there in other countries that can play in the international market, we will be all over them. So we have a growing investment that represents hopefully around 10% of the portfolio by year end, that is leaning on the trend in legality. And that's joining our trends in demographics that support alcohol, the budgetary trends that support defense, the new markets that we have in gaming, and it offers a new opportunity for us in tobacco as well. And honestly, I'd be very surprised if, within, 5-10 years, several of these larger Canadian players aren't gobbled up by even larger players in the alcohol and tobacco space. So we're very excited about the opportunity, and we're very confident in these trends that we're invested in for their ability to deliver both for us and for our investors. So with that, I think we can open it up for a few questions. Nick?
If anybody has a question, feel free to go ahead and press 5-star. That'll go ahead and signal me, and I can unmute your line. All right. It doesn't seem like there's any questions. If you do have a question, feel free to go ahead and shoot it over to us via email. You can email us directly at fa.sales@usamutuals.com. I want to thank everybody for joining us, and have a good rest of your day.
Thank you very much.